David Dearson is an attorney with the Pacific Legal Foundation's Property Rights Division. He's joined PLF in 2018. He's coming to us from Durham, North Carolina. He's been involved in multiple high-profile cases at the PLF, most notably served as a member of the litigation team for Tyler versus Hennepin County, which the U.S. Supreme Court unanimously ruled that home equity theft violates the Fifth Amendment's Taking Clause. He went to college. He went to Washington, D.C., helped to grow the burgeoning movement of millennial libertarians. I'd like to know what that means. And supporting litigation efforts and First Amendment rights, and kind of knew he was going to go to law school. But even earlier, he had a feeling that law was in his vocation when he was first studying the Talmud in fifth grade. I'd like to know what that means. And on his bio, it says he sings karaoke, so we're going to have him sing today. Welcome to Radio Real Estate, Pacific Legal Foundation attorney David Dearson.
Thanks very much, Mark. It's a pleasure.
A very personal thing to say that you shine on karaoke night.
Well, if you'd see it, you'd have no doubt.
Well, my hat's off to you. I've never done it. I'd like to. What the heck was the burgeoning movement of millennial libertarians? What does that mean?
Sure. I mean, if you remember in 2008 and 2012, Ron Paul ran for president of the United States and sort of kicked off a major resurgence in the libertarian movement, had a ton of popularity among young people. It was sort of like the Bernie Sanders phenomenon, but obviously from a libertarian rather than a socialist perspective. And I got very involved in this. In student organizing, I founded the Libertarian Club at my high school. I was president of the College Libertarians at University of North Carolina. And after college, I spent some time working at nonprofit student organizations in D.C. that helped to fund and network libertarian student groups.
That's very interesting. I remember the Ron Paul phenomenon. Do you ever watch Bill Maher? Is he still a libertarian?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I do watch Bill Maher. I think he certainly has libertarian tendencies. I think of him as sort of kind of a centrist, classical liberal.
Interesting. Yeah, he's so in addition,
and a funny guy.
Very funny guy. I mean, he's my age, and I remember him when he first started out, and he's been in several movies, and he was in some episodes of Murder, She Wrote. He's kind of a very interesting guy. So then in addition, my guest, David Dearson, attorney with the Pacific Legal Foundation, you studied the Talmud in fifth grade, and you had a feeling back then that you might go to law school? What's that connection?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I went to, from kindergarten and elementary school, I went to a religious school, and part of that included studying the Talmud. And I was just fascinated by the way that, you know, this basically ancient or very early medieval legal argumentation played out. You know, it was people who were struggling with text, struggling to come up with the best interpretation of rules, struggling to figure out what kind of rules ought to govern their society, you know, given the constraints of the scriptural text that they were working with. And I mentioned to my dad that I just thought it was so fascinating to hear them or to read them sort of working out these different arguments and textual interpretation. And my father was a lawyer, and he told me that's basically what lawyers do is, you know, wrestle with a piece of text, try to figure out what it means, try to figure out the best interpretation and the best rules to take from it. And I just thought it was fascinating. So that was sort of an early sign to me that maybe law would be a good career.
That's so interesting. I never looked at it from that perspective. When I was in fifth grade, elementary school, throughout junior high primarily, many of my teachers thought I should be an attorney, but that was because I incessantly argued with them and was continually sent to the principal's office. So,
well, that describes my experience as well. So we've got that in common.
Okay, so David Dearson, Pacific Legal Foundation attorney. Pacific Legal Foundation takes on cases without charging. They help property owners and try to settle cases that they feel violate private property rights. I don't know if that's a good enough synopsis. And you took on this case, or the Pacific Legal Foundation took on the Pillings case, this nice family that just wanted to add a PUD, and you'll get into what happened there. But it's related to another case that I know I've talked to one of the attorneys about, called the Sheets case. What's a recap, quick recap on that?
Yeah, so the Sheets case was a case that Pacific Legal Foundation won at the Supreme Court last year, and it essentially involves the issue of land use permit exaction. So when an applicant for a land use permit is required by the government to give up some money or to give up some property interest as a condition on that permit. And in Mr. Sheets's case, he wanted to build a single family home, and they charged him about $23,000 in traffic impact fees. The problem is there was no relationship between Mr. Sheets's development's impact on local traffic and the fees they charged. It was essentially an arbitrary number. And as a matter of fact, they were basically shifting the costs that should be attributed to commercial development onto residential development. And of course, the way the law works is that you can't require property owners to give up money or property interest as a condition of a land use permit unless what you're asking for is closely related in nature and in magnitude to the impacts of their development. And what was specifically at issue in the Sheets case was sort of a strange exception to that legal doctrine I just described, where a lot of courts got the idea that the doctrine didn't apply if it was imposed by means of legislation, right? So there's no question that it applied if it was done kind of on an ad hoc administrative basis, you know, some basically local bureaucrat making a discretionary decision of what they wanted to charge you on your permit. But some courts got the idea that, you know, if there was a local ordinance that laid out these fees, that this was immune to challenge. So that was the question at the Supreme Court, whether that exception is viable or not, and the court ruled it wasn't.
You know, it's phenomenal. You just take $23,000. Now, if I was, you know, building an ADU, and we'll talk about that with Jessica Pilling, is that the way you pronounce it?
That's right, yeah.
Pilling's case, you know, it costs a lot of money. You could spend $200,000 maybe to build an ADU or something, or more, but, you know, $23,000, that's, you know, it's a lot of money, 10%. The overall scheme of things, when you are talking about going to the U.S. Supreme Court over $23,000, it almost sounds like a joke. But it's no joke, because if they're going to charge 1,000 people $23,000, or maybe $43,000 or $63,000, then suddenly it's huge, and that's why you take these cases. My guest from the Pacific Legal Foundation, David Dearson, attorney with PLF. So in the case of the Pillings family, Jessica Pillings, a local mom in Haroldsburg, wanted to build a PUD. Their family was growing. They had a house. What was their background?
Yeah, so that's right. They owned a duplex, and they lived in the upstairs unit and rented out the downstairs unit. But as their children were growing up, they were, you know, getting cramped. The walls were kind of shrinking in around them. So what they did is took advantage of SB 9 to subdivide the property, and on the newly created lot, they were going to build a single-family home with an attached ADU. And the city told them, fine, but if you're going to do that, you've got to pay us $40,000 in inclusionary housing fees, which are fees that the city is going to use to subsidize affordable housing elsewhere in the city. And just like I said earlier, you know, these kind of exactions have to be related to the impact of property development. That's totally backwards here, because by building the house and the ADU, of course, they're increasing supply and they're making housing more affordable already. So the the demand from the city was totally inappropriate.
That is so funny. I'm just kind of curious, you might not know this. How big was their parcel?
I'm not sure off the top of my head.
That's kind of a, you know, it's not relevant, but I was just curious. Okay, so they immediately contact you because they were aware of the Sheetz case?
Yeah, that's right. And so I mentioned earlier that the Sheetz case basically got rid of this exception for conditions that are imposed by legislation. And that's how most of these inclusionary zoning conditions work, is they're done by legislation. So until now, they've been very difficult to challenge. But the Pillings had heard about the Sheetz case, and they thought it might help them. So they got in touch with us, and we agreed.
Oh, and before that, my guest David Dearson, attorney with the Pacific Legal Foundation, talking about the Pillings case versus the city of Harrodsburg, California. Before they contacted you, I know that originally it was $40,000, and somehow it was negotiated down to $20,000. Was that before you guys got involved?
That's right. It was before us, and it was thanks to my client, Jess Pilling. Was a tremendous advocate for herself in trying to get around the fee. And essentially, she made the argument that properties which were created under SB 9 ought to be exempt from the fee or at least pay a reduced fee. And she was successful in getting that amendment passed. And so, you know, obviously it's nice to have to only pay 20 instead of 40, but it also shows how arbitrary the fee was in the first place. I mean, remember, these fees are supposed to be conceptually linked to the impact of a development. And if they're just being changed willy-nilly, it's a good indication that they're really not linked to any real-world impact at all.
Now, was that a class you took in college, in law school, the class of willy-nilly?
Yes, that's right. willy-nilly wills and trusts.
So, so as you mentioned earlier, a lot of these fees pertain to commercial, where if you're building a strip mall or something significant, and then we're going to need more traffic lights, and we're going to need an extra left-hand turn lane to accommodate all this traffic. That's where they hit the commercial developer, and that's the link you're talking about. But here, here there was no such link. So you got involved. How long did it take from them calling you until this was thrown out?
Well, so we filed our lawsuit, and the city reached out to us in, I think, just under a week, asking about the possibility of a settlement. And it took us a little bit longer to negotiate the exact terms. But so overall, the process took about 2 months. And we're very happy with the settlement agreement we got. The city agreed to completely refund the fee that they charged her. They also gave an extra $10,000 or so to compensate her for all the trouble and hardship she had to go through in combating the fee. And Pacific Legal Foundation collected $5,000 in attorney's fees. And I think most encouraging is that there's language in the settlement that says that the city recognizes that Jessica is entitled to a refund of the money in the circumstances of her case, which is great to get because, as I'm sure you know, a lot of times cases are settled simply because litigation is expensive and it's not worth the time for a defendant to litigate the case. But what that language shows is this isn't simply a settlement to make the case go away. This is an acknowledgement on the part of the city that they know that the fee they charged her was unlawful.
So what Jessica Pillings did is she saved everybody in the city of Harrodsburg from ever crossing this bridge again.
Well, it's not quite so simple. The policy remains on the books, and of course, the settlement is only binding as it relates to her. The city has indicated that they plan to change the way they apply it going forward based on the settlement. But it wouldn't surprise me if they continued to try to apply it in some different situations. For example, Jess was just building a single family home plus an ADU. But if there's a larger developer building an apartment building with several units, they may try to apply it in that situation with a theory that the law works a little differently. And some courts have said that situation is a little different, but we disagree with that, and we'd certainly be open to challenging that as well.
Even if it was like a huge apartment building, huge number of units?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the issue is that some courts in California have said, well, if there's an option to set aside units at a below market rate rather than paying a fee, well, that's just rent control. And rent control is perfectly legal in California, so there's nothing wrong with the policy. We think that's not quite right, and we'd be very open to challenging that line of reasoning that some California courts have taken.
Very impressive. My guest, attorney David Dearson with the Pacific Legal Foundation, just finished a case, Pillings, like Pill, I-N-G-S, out of Harrellsburg, California, and related case, the Sheets case. Two quick comments on what you said. I can't believe they paid a $10,000 fee, and you guys got $5,000 in legal fees, and you don't charge... You never charged Jessica Pillings, but you did rack up legal fees. So sometimes you do get a settlement where you can get paid, which is great. Otherwise, Pacific Legal Foundation does rely on donations. And I met a woman on this radio program, Marilyn Senegals, back around 2000. Got to know her very well. She lived in Summerlin. And she passed away and left a significant amount of money to the Pacific Legal Foundation. She's the reason why I met you guys and started regular interviews with you guys. So that's impressive. You got that fee, damages, so to speak. You said it took 2 months. If you contacted them and you showed them a Supreme Court decision, and the next day they said, you know what, we made a mistake, we're refunding her the $20,000. Maybe there wouldn't have been any compensation of $10,000.
Well, you know, she certainly pointed them to all the right legal theories. I was very impressed with Jess as a client, because even though she's not a lawyer, she sort of intuitively understood all the reasoning behind the legal theories. And she made basically all of the arguments that we made. I mean, she didn't have the benefit of citations to case law, but essentially she made those same arguments, and the city really wouldn't budge aside from that reduction of the fees that she advocated for. So, a lot of times I think the government tries basically to get away with what it can, and that's why we feel that our work is important, because somebody needs to stand up and sort of make them put something on the line.
Yeah, held accountable, and you're right. They have these fees. They want these fees, and they didn't want to relinquish it, because then it would set a precedent. But now they had to, and then end up paying $10,000. That's great tax money that could have been saved from the city of Harrellsburg. My guest has been David Dearson. He's with the Pacific Legal Foundation. Google the Pacific Legal Foundation. Google the Pillings case or the Sheets case. And, hey, it was really nice meeting you. Loved your background stories. And hopefully we can have another case in the future to talk about.
It's a pleasure, Mark. I look forward to it.
Okay. And by the way, November 4th, was that a date that this was settled or taken? Because I wrote that down on this page.
I think this settlement agreement was finalized before then, but of course, in the settlement agreement, there are some various conditions that have to be satisfied. I mean, they have to actually give us the check, and we have to submit a notice of dismissal for the case. Mm. All of that has happened at this point. We're just waiting on the judge to sign off on that dismissal, but I mean, that's basically a rubber stamp issue.
Well,
at this point, we have received the payment.
We actually have the judge on the other line. He wants to talk to you. He's got a problem. No, I'm just kidding. But I think I think November 4th.
Let me add him.
I think November 4th is when I got the email. And that happened to be my parents' wedding anniversary. They got married in 1945. So it kind of caught my attention. But maybe that's when I got the email announcing the decision. David Dearson, Pacific Legal Foundation, so nice meeting you. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks very much, Mark.
All right, you're welcome. Bye for now. Wow. There you go. I don't know if, what cases they have done close to Santa Barbara. And maybe we can get Pacific Legal Foundation to jump down the city council in Goleta, Santa Barbara, get some local fighting, legal disputes going, and just so things don't get willy-nilly. This is a legal term that we just coined today. Okay, you're listening to Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, radiorealestate.com. I've got a story about a house that sold three times. I actually showed the house to my clients. They liked it. And then it sold, and it sold two more times. And we got some other sales. Got my niece and nephew moving to New York City, right in Manhattan. It's crazy. And if you're from New York, all I needed to say that they're moving to the city. If you go to the city, don't ever say Manhattan. Just say the city. You can say the city. We're not talking about the other boroughs. Just talking about the city. You're listening to Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, radiorealestate.com. Stay tuned. You'll be right back.